Donny Cope and make a
difference in
their animals. Volunteer or donate today. Donny Cope Pet Clinic. Log into donnycope.org. That's DONNYCOE.org.
And let's go ahead and take a look now. Charles Turner to talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, we'll see mostly sunny skies and hazy conditions yet again today. High temperatures around 81, 82 degrees. For tonight, clear skies with that haze still hanging around. Low temperatures down to about 60, 61. Thursday, more sunshine expected. A little less haze in the air. High temperatures around 80. Thursday night, the clouds will roll in with a slight chance of rain showers. Actually, low temperatures down to about 63. For Friday and running up into the weekend, 30 to 40% chance of showers. So mostly cloudy skies, high temperatures, much cooler, around 70, 71.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat McPhilly and Transformation Talk Radio.
Had enough of the been there, done that ideas? Tired of too much talk and so little action? Rewind now and welcome to Transformation and Change Radio with Dr. Kathy Obear, where the vision of true equity, inclusion, courage, and purpose meet powerfully. Dr. Kathy delivers with dynamic, engaging conversation and the most authentically brave dialogue on air today. This hit show will challenge you to explore current issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and deepen your capacity to choose courage to speak up to greater inclusion in everything you do. Fasten your seatbelt and accelerate your effectiveness to become a powerful change agent in your life, community, job, and society. Imagine true equity and inclusion and get the tools to really manifest your vision. No frills, no fluff, just really powerful, good stuff. Transformation and Change Radio starts now.
Welcome to Transformation Change Radio. I'm Dr. Kathy Obear with the Center for Transformation Change, and I'm so excited to welcome Dr. Takisa Pino here. We met just a little bit ago, but in our initial conversation, I was like, oh, I want to keep learning more with you. Critical strategies to really create true equity, inclusion, racial justice, especially within the areas that you have more life experience than I do, counseling centers, which in and of themselves I have found a challenging place to work, and then academic colleges. We've had a lot of folks on looking at systemic full universities, other organizations, but you're my first to be just an academic college. And you were hired for the College of Education, their inaugural first college-level diversity, equity, inclusion officer at Illinois State.
Yeah, thank you. I always tell people I was in the pool, and I was. So I'm the winner. I call myself a winner. Because I get to be the DEI officer for the College of Education at Illinois State University.
And you're even wearing Redbird. I love it.
I know. I thought I'd represent the Illinois State University Redbird today.
Well, what I love about what you're bringing here today is you also have, at least there, from 2010. So that's over a decade working in the counseling center.
Yes.
With an EDI race lens from the beginning, but officially 2014, part of student affairs, you were brought in, or at least within that, chosen to lead the DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion efforts in the counseling center. I'm assuming partner with the director, or were you the director as well?
No, so I was not the director, but definitely the diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative that rolled out of student affairs were something that I partnered with our director and honestly the entire counseling center, right? Because to be able to do this work and to do this type of work well, you really have to be able to hear all voices within the department or organization that you're working with. So really everybody was a part of the EDI process.
Well, that's great to hear because my experience in counseling centers and others is you have the folks that are wanting to do the work, have already been doing it, and then some willing middles, but there are folks dragging their feet, resisting. Maybe it's underground. Maybe they're performing. We'll get to some of that possibly.
Yeah.
I always like to ask folks, just tell us a bit about yourself, whatever you'd like to share, and how are you doing in these times of continuing pandemic? Times needed for racial reckoning, and then we're just preparing for fall semester. So how are you doing?
Absolutely. Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I'm pretty busy, right? You know, when people ask me, you know, like, tell us a little bit about yourself. I like to go through kind of my professional lens, but also, of course, a part of me is a personal lens. And so, like you said, I'm the DEI officer for the College of Education at Illinois State University. I've been at Illinois State University for almost 11 years, coming up in September. And I was at the Council Center for 10 and a half of those years. I just started my DEI position in January 19th, to be exact. And so that is the work that I'm currently doing, really trying to create a framework for the College of Education at Illinois State University to be able to roll out sustainable and systemic change. So that is what I do for work. Actually, I also have a private practice. I'm a marriage and family therapist. So in my extra time, I get to sit with beautiful couples and families and help them to be the couples and families that they want to be, healthy and happy. And I really love doing that too. I also get to teach. So that's a cool thing. I'm 19 at track. Faculty at Illinois State University, and so I get to teach basic counseling skills, which is kind of cool. So that's the professional lens. And then the personal lens is that I'm a mom and a wife. I'm a friend, a daughter, and a sister, and I love all of those people and all of those things. They are really the things that besides my work that gives me fulfillment and help me have the energy to do what I do. Yeah.
I'm hearing that from so many folks doing social justice work these days, especially folk of color, especially Black women, exhausted, burned out, and so having to have some spiritual, emotional, physical rejuvenation, especially as we're moving to month, I think, 17 of this pandemic.
Yeah.
And many organizations are coming back hybrid or in person, and then all that comes with it. To keep sustained, I'd love you to, if you're willing to share, a bit about growing up or life experience that fuel your deep passion. I mean, for most folks, this is a calling. It's not just a job. And so there are folks listening who relate to you. It's like, it's been decades that I've been doing this work, maybe not officially. So kind of, is there anything you want to share about what fuels your passion to show up even when you are close, if not in exhaustion, burnout?
Yeah, absolutely. So I remember growing up, I grew up with my mom, my dad, and my older sister. I am the baby of the family. And so I remember, I think it must have been pre-K. I think it was pre-kindergarten. We had to draw pictures. And I was so proud of my picture, Kathy, that I went home and I marched straight back to my dad's bedroom and I said, "Dad, look at this picture. I did it right." Oh, you know, I have an ego, okay? I think I'm amazing. And the first thing that my dad said to me was, "How come none of these people are Black?" And that was the first time that it kind of opened my eyes to, how come none of these, why did I draw people who look like me, who look like our family, who look like the people who I love? And this was, I'm pretty sure this was like at 3 or 4 years old. And I remember kind of having that aha moment of, that's a really good question, Dad. Why didn't I represent myself within these images? And I think that was kind of the key point to me having a lens. There are different identities. People are diverse. People are different. And really working to honor who I am and my identity in different ways. So that was honestly the key moment at 3 or 4 that really helped me to kind of start having passion for the work and the differences between people. And then I really, really fell in love with diversity, equity, and inclusion work because the first identity I walk out in the world with is being Black. It's my race. And I think that that's very common for folks who identify as Black, because it really shapes the way that people see the world, that people see us, right? And it really shapes the way that I see the world. And so that's kind of like my predominant identity. That's the one that I think about throughout the day when I walk into different spaces. And that takes a lot of energy and effort. So the diversity, equity, and inclusion work, really just a part of my life. It kind of had to be because of the system that I live in the United States of America. It's a part of how people interact with me and I interact with them throughout the day.
Couple thoughts. I love this. When I was 3 and 4, I was not paying at all attention to race, and I'll bet it wasn't a very long time before. I mean, I noticed demographic difference. I grew up in the civil rights era, but it was always those bad whites that were perpetuating racism, white supremacy, and it took me decades to begin to do the self-work of racist attitudes, racist behaviors, how I perpetuate dominant white culture, how I discriminate. And as we've kind of transitioned into counseling centers, my experience working with 4 or 5 counseling centers was the resistance, particularly of white counselors and leaders, just schooled and trained into these are the ways you do counseling, but not seeing how that was kind of white middle class, upper middle class ways, much less the hierarchy and the and most folks of color that I shared and talked to when counseling centers said, I can't bring my full self here. You know, maybe behind a closed door or working with a client, but I get racist microaggressions from clients, from staff. Absolutely. When I raise them, I'm the angry blank. Right. So I don't know if that was just the 3, 4, 5 places I was consulting or if you're finding in your colleagues. So long way of saying counseling centers, challenges, progress you've seen, what kind of work the counseling centers really need to do to transform practice and culture to truly be equitable, inclusive, especially around issues of race.
So honestly, I would broaden that out to any organization. I think that, you know, you have people are at different places, right, in your journey of inclusiveness. There are some people who do not at all want to be inclusive. They don't want to think about race. They don't want to talk about race. And they wish that the word was never created, right? And then you have, like, your choir, those folks who are, you know, on board, ready to talk, ready to really fight against marginalization, systemic inequality, those type of things. And then you have your folks in the middle. And I don't know that I can narrow that down to counseling centers, because I would say that that is kind of across the board, you know, at least the United States of America. I don't know a lot about the world, but I do know a little bit about the United States. So I'd say that it would definitely mirror our systems in the U.S. of A. One of the things that I have noticed within counseling centers that has been, it was an aha moment for me, is because an assumption that I had working with counseling centers doing equity, diversity, and inclusion work was that we talk and heal hearts for a living. This is going to be easy stuff. You know, when we talk about the healing process, restorative justice, when we talk about race, we talk about difficult things every day with our clients. So this will be a breeze for us. Well, I found out that it is not a breeze. It's not a breeze when you're working with therapists, right, about personal things. Because we can definitely be outward focused on our clients, but sometimes that internal work is difficult for us.
My experience parallels my personal experience, I wanted to help people of color from that paternalistic, just be more like me, be more white, I can help you and educate you. And then if we make the transition, because we'll get the faculty too, it sounds very familiar. Folks that have studied, taught, I've had counseling, especially white counselors say, I can work with anybody without realizing they were still pushing a very white dominant cultural and weren't taking into account racism or their perfect identity. So what were some of the strategies that helped, whether, you know, race and other issues, that helped the counselors and the leaders do that self-work to realize how they're perpetuating, how they really don't know as much as they need to, and then changing their practices to truly meet the needs of everyone, not just folks that, was it Yahweh? No, Yavis, young, I'm older than you, so I just remember a counseling course I taught. It was like, they're young, attractive, similar values, like me. There was something like that.
No worries. Actually, I love to learn, so that's a new acronym for me. You were asking us about counseling centers. I lost your question. I'm sorry.
What are some of the practices, strategies to individual development, self-work, so that they would provide better services, and then the center practices policies that were more aligned?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we found, and honestly, Kathy, that you helped us with, is to create a framework that would unify us throughout the Division of Student Affairs, and that was the Multicultural Organization MISO model, the NCOD model. And so that was really the framework that we used to start our anti-racism social justice work, our inclusion work within the counseling center. And the NCOD model very rightly talks about making sure that those who are currently in power are on board. And I found out very quickly that that was step one. So really being able to utilize the power structure within the institution, right? And the power structure really comes from the president's office. So what are the initiatives that the president's office are doing? What are the values of the institution? And being able to align those with things that needed to shift within the counseling center, that was the way that the change started to happen. Because if we can align it, right, with the resources, if we can align it with the mission and vision, then leadership came on board with that process, with that process. And I think part of it is, you know, leadership gets to toot their horn and say, hey, look at what we're doing and how it aligns with the university's values and initiatives. At the same time, I think it's great to toot our own horn and say, hey, we're actually doing this work. So that was really step one, is to get leadership on board by aligning it with the hierarchical structure of the institution. And then step two was really assessment, right? We all hate, well, no, we don't hate research, right? We love research. We love data. Things are great. But really gathering data and understanding that the voice, right, qualitative data is just as important as those numbers, the quantitative data, because quantitative data really lends itself towards a majority voice, but those ends of one, that one indigenous Native American person within the center, right, or the one Vietnamese counselor that you have. Those voices and those lenses are so important to be able to hear to make sure that our center is welcoming and inclusive. And so making sure that we didn't just look at those numbers and say 80% of people exist. We really wanted to look at the individual and hear the individual voice, which lends itself towards equity, right? Giving people individually what they need to be successful. So that was kind of the second step, was the assessment. And then the third step was really knocking out an action plan. of saying, okay, how are we going to get here? What are the barriers? And how will people be held accountable for them? And so some of the policies and procedures, like our annual evaluation, we added something on there that says, this is what you said you were going to do at the beginning of the year that focuses on DEI. At the end of the year, did you do that? If not, why? How have you progressed in this area? So really connecting the performance evaluation, and it had a little bit of weight to it, to doing the work. So those were kind of the three steps that we went through in the center that was super helpful.
I love it. So it's individual change and also systemic change, I'm assuming,
yes.
About changing how y'all do intake and how you do hiring and how you do onboarding and exit interviews. So the full breadth, everything you do, EDI lens, what's aligned, where do we fall short? Competencies. Folks listening, you may know that on my website, drkathyobaird.com/resources, lots of open access resources, handouts, videos, including expected competencies for folks creating an anti-racist organization. Something I learned since George Floyd's murders. I work with top leaders because the MCOD model you're talking about, Drs. Jackson, Hardiman, and Holbino, their work, there are probably five or six different chapters and articles. And you'll see some of those materials free, again, open access on my works website. They really do talk about leader buy-in. And I didn't do the competencies. So are there some ways that you've been helping leaders get clear? We want counselors who are really challenging the ways they were taught to counsel and make sure they're inclusive and multicultural and dealing with microaggressions in the moment. So are there, I think this is a wave of organizations, at least in higher ed.
Yeah.
Are you all having experience, strength, and hope to share about competencies?
Yeah. So I think one of the great things about the counseling field is competencies is kind of the foundation of what we And so as we think about competencies differently, right, as we add that multicultural lens, as we add that equity lens, we add those things to the audit that we do within our system. And so one of the things that we need is to look individually at ourselves as therapists is to do an annual cultural audit to make sure that we were competent in the areas that align with the DEI work that we were doing. And so it was something where we were able to create goals after we did our self-audit. We could create goals to how we were going to grow and develop over the year. And again, that was attached to our performance evaluation. The other thing that we did with hiring practices is we weighted folks higher who had previous experience with EDI work. Right? So when we're looking at our candidates, if they have a history of doing real work in EDI, then we would rank those candidates higher because that's the type of folks that we wanted to include within our system, those people who are always working on their competence in the area of EDI. So that's another shift that we made within the counseling.
Listeners are going, so it's not just one out of 20 questions. You have multiple questions, demonstrated capacity, so it's not just what they say, but in the interview, and they were weighted higher. Some folks will say that's reverse whatever and how, and yet you're saying these are the competences we need to serve the full student, and this is workplace counseling competencies.
Right, and Kathy, I think people see equity, diversity, and inclusion as about race here. And that is not what it is at all. Equity, diversity, and inclusion is about multiple lenses. So we looked at political affiliation, religious preferences, English as a second language. Like, how are you doing in these areas? What is your knowledge base? Are you able to apply feel so resilient all time. I don't know how it could be reversed anything. If we're looking at the breadth of identity markers to make sure that we're doing the work that we need to do to serve the people that we serve.
And that's a strategy to engage the resistance before it comes up. And it could also be, as people are listening, they may have pain points based on the data, 5 or 6 categories of difference, where whether it's staff and employees or those they serve. And so some folks may say, if you do everything, you'll lose attention. But don't forget, it's a both and, breadth and. We're looking for folks that particularly have competencies in these areas. On the website, you'll see group identity cards. This is another resource for folks. This one has, I think, 36 categories of difference. I know you're very familiar with those. FYI, I just revised it for how do we use an equity lens as we're thinking about coming back to a hybrid work environment and policies and practices.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure we're thinking about all folks and their intersecting identities.
Love that.
So there's so much more in counseling centers, but I want to use that to bridge. Because you're, again, the first person I've had a chance to talk to in 3 years like this, you are in one college.
College of Ed.
And so how is the work in a college? Because I know you've got other folks in other colleges, so you're not necessarily saying about your specific college. How is working within an academic college similar or different than student affairs? And the folks who are listening, that's the student services, Res Life, counseling center, health center, career services, admissions, those sorts of things. So how is the work in the college similar and different?
Yeah, so from the student affairs side of the house to the academic side of the house, the academic side of the house does have a lot more hierarchy. So there's a lot more systems of hierarchy. It's kind of like tenured professors, associate professors, assistant professors, non-tenured track faculty. Then you have your administrative professional, civil service, office personnel, that type of thing. And so there's definitely folks who have a lot more access to resources and power and have traditionally had that access to resources and power. And so that's something that I've noticed about the academic side of the house is that there's a lot, it feels like a lot more embedded traditions and a lot more levels of hierarchy within the academic side of the house than the student affairs side of the house.
The education elitism that I run into of, oh, you went to that school, or we want to hire much less, oh, you're not tenure track, oh, you're just a lecturer. So the classism that's built in, oh, you're staff, and then the microaggressions and practices and policies which benefit folks higher up. We just have a couple minutes before the break. Are there some ways you have found particularly to get the buy-in of the deans, directors, faculty? Just a couple minutes and then we'll come back after the break and keep going. Just a couple quick nuggets.
One of the things, again, that kind of aligns what I shared about the counseling center, it are those value statements. So one of the amazing things that have come out of all the tragedy that we've seen in this country that has been videotaped in this country over the past few years and have opened up a lot of people's eyes about inequities within our system, right? That has really helped to push universities forward in the work of equity work. So in that EDI work, universities are saying, oh my goodness, like we really need to get on board with EDI work. And so a lot of universities have formulated like the lead EDI officer, which we have at Illinois State University. And so again, for that buy-in is I collaborate with, it's Dr. Doris Houston, I collaborate with her to, again, align the initiatives that are coming out of the top of the house, the president's office, to make sure that the college initiatives are aligned with the university initiatives. We're also doing a branding campaign to make sure that diversity, equity, inclusion is on the forefront of everybody's mind. And the branding campaign says DEI is you, ISU. So it's you, it's your responsibility. You're responsible for making sure that this work gets done, not those people who have that title, but it's the entire campus's responsibility. And so that's one thing that really helps leadership get the buy-in is, again, if you can parallel those efforts from those folks who are in power, and then to be able to roll out that educational campaign and be able to toot our own horn and say, hey, we're doing this work. I think that really helps leadership people.
As we take a deep breath, we're about to go to break. How can people find you, Dr. Keisha Pena, if they want to have more conversation?
So specifically about DEI work within an educational setting, people can email me at my work email address, which is D as in David, D as in David, E as in Paul, I, N as in Nancy, A, at ilstu.edu. If people would like to talk a little bit, we haven't talked tons about this, but a little bit about consultation. I do have a private practice that I work in doing counseling. I'm a trained marriage and family therapist, and I also travel doing consultation work. People can reach me at Dr. Dr. Dakesa, DAKESA DINA@gmail.com.
Thank you so much. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. I'm Dr. Kathy O'Bear. We'll see you all in a few minutes.
We're back in that jazz music, aren't we? I don't know. What happened to the rap music, Benny?
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Thank you, God. I like it.
You're welcome.
I'm going to leave that in my car. Boy, I got to have me some bass something now. I'm telling you.
Get in the groove with Dr. Pat and her guests on Transformation Talk Radio. It's always something new around here. Visit thedrpatshow.com. Imagine what it would be like to turn your pain into purpose. Tune in to Transformation with Martinet every second and fourth Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Martinet and her guests are here shining their lights today through empowering stories of hardship and transformation. Begin to see your life in a new light. Visit MartinetEmmons.com and tune in every second and fourth Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific to Transformation with Martinet.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. Let the journey begin.
Have you heard about shifting the collective vibration and consciousness on the planet? Join me, Kimberly Barrett, on the Sharing Love and Light show every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern at TransformationTalkRadio.com to explore the depth of vibration and consciousness on our planet and learn how you can shine your love and light. To learn more, visit SharingLoveAndLightShow.com.
Get empowered on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Inspire. Create. Empower. Only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
In a roundabout of dysfunction, learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy O'Bear. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy O'Bear. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyobear.com. That's drkathyobear.com.
When was the last time you had that feeling that you knew something, but you couldn't explain how you knew it? How powerful would it be for your life and business if you could consciously tap into that magic within you? What if you could remember that there's something supernatural about you? Tune in to Absolute Alignment with Christelle Biga, when success feels easy. Every first and third Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
You've been listening, but are you watching? Tune in to your favorite shows on the Transformation Talk Radio Facebook page. We stream live video podcasts every day.
It's time to shake out your money-making truth on Soul Wisdom Abundance with Jennifer Bloom, creating wealth from spiritual health on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show is more than your roadmap to success. It's your compass to abundance through joy and ease. Jennifer Bloom teaches you about the soul's relationship to money and wealth and how improving that relationship serves both you and the world. Learn more at JenniferBloom.com.
Champion Your Life with me, Leanne Champion. First and third Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That new gym membership might help you get fit, but what about emotional fitness? Jump into the rushing waters of personal growth. Don't waste another minute feeling unfulfilled. Visit championyourlife.com and let's do this together.
Ascending with the Arcturians with Vivian Chouvet. Tune in to Transformation Talk Radio every second and fourth Fridays at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We are shifting from this third dimensional plane of reality to higher octaves of life. Let us reclaim our sovereignty as a united family of life and manifest the planetary ascension. Our return to Prime Creator. For information on our services and to connect with Vivian, visit InfiniteHealingFromTheStars.com.
Have you ever felt like if you just had the right tools and resources, you'd be able to carve a path toward the life your heart is aching for? Guess what? You have everything you need inside you. I'm Natasha Ornego, and I'm here to show you that your healing is in your hands. Tune into my show, Unlock the Healing Path, every second and fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To learn more about me and my work, visit NatashaOrnego.com.
Hey everybody, it's me, psychic medium Jamie, and me, spirit walker Nicole. We are so excited to introduce you to our new live call-in show called Shades of Spirit on TransformationTalkRadio.com. As we connect you with your crossover loved ones, angels, and guides, and also help you develop your own psychic and healing abilities. For more information and to book your own private experience, go to ShadesOfSpirit.com and also follow us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Tune into Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce every first and third Tuesday of the month at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Join Susan and her guests as they share the stories that shift our souls about radical transformation, courageous breakthroughs, and life lessons. Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce. For more information, go to TransformationTalkRadio.com or visit Susan's website at SusanDolce.com.
I'm Dr. Kathy Robert, Center for Transformation Change, having a great conversation, learning with Dr. Takisa Pina. As we continue to think about how do you do equity, inclusion, change work inside organizations, and we've said counseling centers, now we've been moving into academic a bit more. So the folks that aren't yet on board that might be in resistance, and I'm also finding some backpedaling that leaders said, particularly after George Floyd's murder, the protests, the time of racial reckoning, students putting another list of demands up. I'm finding these generations of students are clear, persistent, and yet I still find leaders, we don't have time, we've got to think about the pandemic coming back. So are there ideas about how to keep progress, sustained effort, when there could be some of this backsliding going on?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that I found is organizing and having strategy is really key in doing whatever initiative or movement that you want to occur on campus. So one of the things that has happened over the last 2 years at ISU is a movement that our African-American students have brought called Anti-Black ISU. And it was about, like, the treatment that Black students felt on campus. And so one of the things that really helped with their movement and really helped for, again, those in power, listen to the students was their organizational factor. So they came up with a list of demands, strategies. They had leadership. Right, advisors, they organized marches, utilized the media. They had a solid strategy, right, to continue to keep the lens, right, the pressure, the lens of their needs and their wants on campus. So definitely organizing and having a strategy is key to having the process be sustainable and to start to create some of that
systemic. It's almost like national shift, having folks metaphorically on the streets or on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
External pressure, internal change, and alumni. Now, here's a new question I hadn't thought of. How can folks in your role or deans of College of Education help alumni organize to also get pressure on faculty, staff, leaders that aren't quite on board yet?
Mm-hmm. So we are so lucky to have an amazing communications person who really has helped us reach out to our alumni. So one of the things that ISU College of Education does very well is we keep our list of all of our alumni. And one of the things that we did when I first joined the College of Education is we reached out to alumni. I made a video. I said, hey, it's so good to meet you. I know that you all used to be in the College of Education. We need your advice on some things. We want you to know that your voice is still valued. And so we sent out a survey to our alumni just to start to engage them on some things and let them know, hey, we're here for you to support you, and we hope that you can give back and support us. So that communication piece and being able to connect to alumni is super important for the work, at least that I'm doing within the College of Education.
You reminded me, one college I got to consult and train with sent out an email survey to all of their grads asking what did you not learn here? What skills and competencies? And EDI was their highest one.
Absolutely.
It happened to be College of Nursing, but I bet College of Education is similar.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether it's ongoing alumni development, which would be great for relationship building, but if we bring it back into, could you imagine, and maybe you do, get examples from alumni as well as current students to say, this was my classroom experience, this was my advising experience, because that data might help some of the faculty who read and write and publish and are nationally recognized for doing work around racism, inclusive classroom, sexism, and yet their practices perpetuate microaggressions. So how are you getting faculty, or could you, to really look at their curriculum, their pedagogy, their classroom dynamics?
Yes. So there are a lot of ways. I'm very lucky to be in Illinois, let me tell you that. We have a new law that came into play, which is our culturally responsive teaching practices, teaching and leading practices for all teachers and educators within the state of Illinois. So legally, by October 2025, we are required to have those standards, which are all focused on EDI, aligned with the curriculum. In our department and how we teach future teachers. We're very lucky to, I'm very lucky to be in a state that makes things law. The other thing that we're looking at, though, is those things that are desirable for our faculty, like those who are going through the tenured process. We have a process called ASEP, ASPP, and that's really kind of the tenured process. The process for tenured faculty, faculty. So what are those items that we can put into that portfolio that are focused on equity, diversity, and inclusion that will count towards your tenure process? If you're doing the service work, let's weight that as much as we weigh your scholarship or as much as we weigh your teaching, right, and your pedagogy. And so just really looking at shifting some of those systems. Now, it sounds so easy. I'm not saying this is an easy process because you have to go all the way through the provost office to the trustees board and all of those things to get some of these items switched and changed. But the process has started to start to talk about, okay, what this document is really about values. We're saying we value research. We're saying that we value teaching. Let's value EDI and being able to put those items into that tenure track process so that our professors can get credit for it.
And the data of the demographics, who are the students you've taught this year? What are the grades? What is the satisfaction and learning from the student perspective? Some places are doing that kind of data, and I'll bet some faculty and chairs are pushing back because they may not want that kind of data that minute public.
Right.
But that plus the state law, I wonder how many, are there other states that you know have similar expectations and requirements?
Not that I know of, but I am kind of micro-focused on Illinois.
I bet people are Googling already.
Yeah.
I do know IUPUI, which is Indiana, whole university has put in more of an EDI requirement in two years. But you're also
great.
Talking about a process so that people get equitable coaching, support, mentoring, instead of a handful of faculty mentor who they're comfortable with, which is usually
right.
Folks like me. Whew. I find faculty want skills like creating an inclusive classroom from the start and what if microaggressions happen. And so some of that faculty development can be campus-wide. Are you finding the School of Ed? I mean, is that part of your portfolio, someone else's role to do some of that skill development?
Yeah, so that is actually something that we have that is launched out of our provost office. It's called Growth Teams. So each college is required to have a growth team that focuses on culturally responsive and inclusive teaching practices, and specifically professional development and mentoring within the college as it connects to culturally relevant and inclusive teaching practices. So we do have somebody in the provost office who covers that, and we have teams within our colleges that implement that strategy.
So instead of whoever happens to be doing it, this is a structure, a system with hierarchy,
yeah,
resources, accountability, almost like the Inclusion Partner Program, which you
exactly
referenced earlier, which we started at Illinois State.
Yes.
The idea of people built into every department. So within
exactly
the college, what are all the different departments, one or two faculty and staff who get more training and development with some of the competencies to be in meetings, to be in planning, decision-making, to revise practices, policies. And just to let folks know, I am doing that Inclusion Partner course again starting the last Friday of August, but you can find that on my website, drkathybaird.com/events, or email me if you want to know more. So can't let you go, if you're willing, without PhD in marriage and family. I also, when I'm doing especially white accountability groups, white folks will say, I think we're fine, but it's my family. what would you suggest for folks, whether it's a mixed-race family, all-white family, and there are two things, active racist comments and behaviors, and or how do you raise children to be EDI / race aware so that we have new generations really fulfilling the country's and world's vision of what we need?
Yeah. One thing that I have found to be extremely helpful when we are wanting to create change, so active change in behavior, which is difficult to do, let me tell you. So one thing that I found is people who feel heard and understood are more likely to be willing to be educated and open and kind of open their minds and their hearts to new things. And so I would encourage folks, lean into a space of curiosity. So if you hear a comment, I tell people when your heart goes off, right? You hear a comment, you're real pretty for a black girl, right? Or, you better not bring so-and-so home, or, you know, you're going to get kicked out of this family, or those people know what they're doing. I don't know much. They can't get themselves together. Really leaning into a space of curiosity and saying something like, who are those people? I'm just very curious. Or why wouldn't I be able to bring my other home? Can you tell me a little bit more about that? So making sure that you're leaning into curiosity, asking questions. We all know that when the wall goes up, the defenses go up. That's not helpful. But once people feel heard and understood, then you can lean into education. Then you can lean in and say, well, that has not been my experience, because then they're willing to listen. And I'll tell you a really quick story. I was having a meeting, and one of the folks in the meeting said, oh, my goodness, I am having a blonde moment. I just couldn't, I don't know what happened. And I said, oh, what does that mean? I'm not sure with what a blonde moment means. And it just took that one question of curiosity to kind of go, I guess it's not a blonde moment. I shouldn't have said blonde. I'm just having trouble remembering what I wanted to share today. And I said, oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense, because I have those moments too, and I'm definitely not blonde. So being able to, that's another thing that I use a lot is humor, but being able to lead into that question, making sure people feel heard and understood with no judgment, and then being able to ask the question if you're able to share your perspective on things. And usually when people feel heard, they will say yes. And that's how dialogues happen, and that's how behavioral change occurs.
I love it. I know for me it took a lot of space, practice, to be able to stay centered enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you said what the heart alarm goes off, I call it triggers or hot buttons. That's when it's particularly challenging for me to be curious. And so it's a strategy, because some folks might be hearing us and go, well, you're colluding and coddling. It's like, no, this is a strategy.
It's a strategy, yes.
So if we have a couple minutes left, most folk of color are saying to me, I'm exhausted, I'm burned out.
Mm-hmm.
I was before the pandemic. Now that we've been remote, I realized how much racist dynamics were around me that I was just putting up with or strategizing, and now I got to go back to in person. So if we tie these last two together, whether folks are white, folks of color, other marginalized identities, what are ways to take care of ourselves so we might have the bandwidth and the presence to do what you're suggesting of curiosity, leaning in, let me hear, acknowledge, and then share my perspective?
Yeah, I think that self-care is something that people have really had to learn during the pandemic. I have learned so many people's true colors. Like, throughout the pandemic, you cannot put that mask or that face on forever. You just learn where people are, they're stressed out, and you get to know the real person. So we've all, throughout the pandemic, been exhausted. We've all been dealing, most of us, I won't say all, have been dealing with a lot of burnout just in the shifts in our lives and the stress from worry and fear. So I would say for folks of color, going back into the office, maybe they've had a little bit of respite during COVID, working from home, or being in a space where they can reflect more, going back into the office. I would say remember what helped you in your self-care during those COVID times. Don't forget that. So when I am a true introvert, okay, when I'm done for the day, I want to be in a dark room by myself. Yes, I have kids, I have a husband, I have all those loving people, but I know for me, I need that time. So I shut the door, and my kids know it's mommy time. It's mommy time. After a certain hour at night, it is mommy time because I am important also with all those other identities and all those other roles. And that includes my career. I am also important. I get to say no, and I need to do those self-care techniques that are important for me. So just remember what helped you during the quarantine and continue to do that throughout the
next year. Dr. Kisa Pina, thank you so much. As we close, could you remind people how they can find you if they want to talk more about some of these ideas or have some consultation with you?
Absolutely. Consultation and marriage and family therapy work is Dr. Kisa Pina at gmail.com. And then the DDI work within the academic unit would be DDPINA@LSTU.ca.
Thank you for taking the time, sharing your wisdoms and insights. This is Transformation and Change Radio. I'm Dr. Kathy O'Bear, and we will see you next month. And if you want more of these resources, you can look at the website or my website, drkathyobear.com. Thank you again, Vicky. I'm so appreciative.
Thank you.
You all go well this summer.
You've been listening to Dr. Kathy O'Bear on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next time as Kathy inspires listeners to become agents of change, motivate, innovate, and speak truth to power. Step into the courageous you that will change the world. Connect to life-changing conversations to extend your reach. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyobear.com. That's drkathyobear.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
Hey, good Wednesday to you. Benny Hazard here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the town. Still over on I-5 northbound, just around the West Seattle Bridge, heading up into downtown Seattle. Slow and stop-and-go issues there. It will break free just before the 520 floating bridge. 405 northbound is heavy after the 167 still, but it will break free just after Sunset Boulevard. Smooth up through the Kennedale Hill. And stay tuned for another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, the Dr. Pacho Talk Radio to Thrive By... The Ultimate Guide to Shamanism, a modern guide to shamanic healing, tools, and ceremony with special guest Rebecca Keating.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is once again calling on Governor Andrew Cuomo to step down. Scott Pringle reports.
De Blasio says Cuomo needs to end the agony that he's putting New York State through and end the pain of the women he hurt. The mayor, not impressed with Cuomo's explanation following the Attorney General's report accusing the governor of sexually harassing women.
Stop with this attempt to say culturally somehow he's allowed to do what he did. No, it's not acceptable. He needs to resign. Let's get this over with.
The mayor notes he thinks he will work well with Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul, who would take over should Cuomo step down or be impeached.
Forecasters warn conditions are ripe for an above-average hurricane season. Sarah Bartlett has the story.
In their updated outlook, NOAA says there's a 70% chance of having between 15 and 21 named storms. 7 to 10 are expected to be hurricanes, and up to 5 could reach at least Category 3 strength. There were 7 major hurricanes last year, while 30 storms were named.
Boeing's second attempt to launch the Starliner capsule today from Cape Canaveral in Florida is canceled. Officials say valves in the engine were in an unexpected position. The test mission hoped to prove that the capsule was safe enough to take people to the International Space Station. NASA says the launch has been delayed indefinitely. Make that 53 wins in a row for the U.S. women's basketball team in Olympic competition. Doug Thompson has details.
Team USA cruised past Australia 79-55 to win their quarterfinal matchup. Brianna Stewart with a game-high 23 points for the U.S. They'll face Serbia in the semifinals on Friday. Meanwhile, the U.S. men's team takes on Australia in the semifinals on Thursday. That game's slated to begin at 12:15 a.m. Eastern time in the U.S. The U.S. women's volleyball team advanced in the semifinals with a win over the Dominican Republic. They're seeking their first ever gold medal after winning silver on three previous occasions. And Canada's Andre DeGrasse won gold in the men's 200 meters with American sprinters finishing second, third, and fourth.
You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
For 35 years, Donny Coe Pet Clinic has provided comprehensive care for the animals of people in need. Funded by donations and powered by volunteers, Donny Coe Pet Clinic keeps overhead to a minimum to ensure healing is at a maximum. Please join Team Donny Coe and make a difference in the lives of people and their animals. Volunteer or donate today. Donny Coe Pet Clinic. Log into DonnyCoe.org. That's DonnyCoe.org.
Let's go ahead and take a look now. Charles Turner to talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, we'll see mostly sunny skies and hazy conditions yet again today. High temperatures around 81, 82 degrees. For tonight, clear skies with that haze still hanging around. Low temperatures down to about 50, 61. Thursday, more sunshine expected. A little less haze in the air. High temperatures around 80. Thursday night, the clouds will roll in with a slight chance of rain showers. Actually, low temperatures down to about 63. For Friday and running up into the weekend, 30 to 40% chance of showers. So mostly cloudy skies, high temperatures, much cooler, around 70, 71.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Yes, what? You don't need to wait until the new year to set new goals for yourself. Hi, I'm Joan Marlowe, the host of Awareness to Action, and I'm taking this concept to a whole new level. I've developed a program to take your awareness to action in 90 days. Let me introduce you to your day one. Day one can start any day you choose. So why not now? We will use powerful brainstorming, mastermind, visioning, and goal setting techniques to open your awareness of what you really want in your life and take action with intention to get there. Choose to work with me one-on-one or in a small group. Let's connect, lift each other up, and hold each other accountable. I'm offering a free consult to design your program. Visit my site, peacefulhealing.com, to connect with me, and let's find out when your day one will begin.
Did you know that when we talk about the Earth's ecosystems, the most important ecosystem has been left out? You. We created the ecosystem approach to recapture human potential.
Find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Join us every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time for the Ecosystem Approach Show with Jason and Patricia on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome. Okay, see that right there? Like, I don't know if it shows up backwards, Jamie, right? So that's my mug. Do what you love. Love what you do. I got to tell you, that's what this show's about today. You're going to meet Rebecca. Yeah, you're going to meet Rebecca. Rebecca Keating is the author of an amazing book, The Ultimate Guide to Shamanism, A Modern Guide to Shamanic Healing Tools and Ceremony. I so love she did this book. I really love that we're going to bring this conversation to the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th century. I'm just loving it. And let me tell you why. Benny, do you want to know? Hi, Benny. Hi, Jamie.
Hi
to both y'all. here's why. Something special happened yesterday. You want to know what it is? And it's not like a super eclipse or, you know, like the moon didn't fall. But something interesting energetically happened yesterday. Would you like to know?
Of course.
All right. So, you know, I am watching the Olympics. And I am total awe. And, Rebecca, you're going to be able to relate to this. I'm in total awe about the women. I am just struck by how these women, I mean, certainly the men, yes. We expect men to be great at the Olympics, but the women are stealing the show for the United States at least, but not just the United States. I mean, come on, you know, take a look at the Aussies, right? Take a look at the people that are, you know, in the single kayak races. I am just in awe. And that's why it's so important for the show today, because we have to have a new way to deal with the new energy. Now, why am I talking sports? Well, I mean, just the Olympics today, because they're right there. But when you take a look at a woman running a race under a speed that nobody ever thought was possible. Or you take a look at wrestling. Sorry, I had to talk about women's wrestling. Got to talk about it. And you take a look at the people that are doing extraordinary things, and you're watching the results of this. And you look at the energy of these athletes. And I'm going to tell you, I do believe that they are got some shamanism going on there. I really believe that they have got an energy that when they get interviewed, their interviews are like ridiculous. When they get interviewed and they start to talk about how they feel and what they've done, and you see them crying, and you see the energy of who they are, and then you see McLaughlin just run so fast, so comfortably, and you take a look at Simone Biles returning and getting a bronze, and you take a look at, my gosh, beach volleyball versus Switzerland. You have to understand or at least feel there's a sense of something. Today, the Ultimate Guide to Shamanism, a modern guide to shamanic healing tools and ceremony, says this to me. If you read this book, I've read the book. Oh, my God. I got to say to Rebecca, oh, my gosh, Rebecca, you got to be kidding me about the imagery in this book. For real, right? I'm reading this book, and my sense is that what Rebecca is bringing to the forefront is not just for the handful of healers that we traditionally associate with this, but this is for everyone. So today I want all of you to meet this amazing woman, Rebecca Keating. And you've got to put Rebecca, like, in the realm of all these other people I just mentioned, because she's coming forward, and we're going to give three copies of this book away, Benny, but she's coming forward, and she's saying, come on, shaman sisters, come on, let's get together, let's see what we can do. Shaman sisters, that's us, shaman sisters. That could be me growing up in the Bronx. Maybe I'm the shaman sister of the monkey bars, but the point is this. She's opened up the door for all of us to step forward in the 21st, 22nd, 23rd century and create some kind of healing magic and shifting that the energy of the universe is asking us to do. Rebecca, it's great to have you. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. And I love what you just said. It's just perfect. And now is the time. Now is the time for this.
I'm struck. And let me just kick it off, and then let's talk about, you know, the backdrop of the book and you. I'm struck by these women in a highly competitive environment. And if you watch them, and you watch them race together, or you watch them compete together, or you watch them play together, there is an energy that you know is happening there that cannot be described in logical linear. Although when you see these people interview them, that's where they want to go. And I want to ask you, when you decided to sit down and describe this next invitation and call shaman sisters together, what was your vision and what challenges and obstacles did you, most amazing Rebecca, have to overcome to bring you right here to this moment?
Yeah, so my vision was really more of a personal growth process originally. I had been through a lot of trauma and many things in my life, and I just wanted to heal myself. And the name came to me very early on in my shamanic journey. And at the time, I wasn't really even sure what it was going to mean, but it all started to come to me, and it really just unfolded in this beautiful way, like a flower kind of blooming and like a butterfly, you know, just coming out of the cocoon and spreading its wings and flying. And what I'm seeing now is this beautiful community that we have that is really global, and we do a lot of ceremonial things, and the sisterhood that is forming with so many women, and every woman and brothers as well, but everyone really stepping into their fullest potential. And every time it's just like this blossoming of people coming in with this grief or these wounds, and them allowing to release these things and to just step into their power, and holding the space for every woman to be in their beauty and their power. And there's no jealousy or competition. And some of the things I've definitely had to face are the sisterhood wounds. And then it became really clear to me the name, the Shaman Sisters, because women, we have been so programmed for competition and being small and all this stuff. And so I've had to work through a lot of that myself, and then also be an example to allow other women to work through those issues and to know that, like, we have each other and we don't need to compete or have the jealousy, and that there's space for every person to shine.
And that's what I love about the message you're bringing forward. You know, there's a lot that we can look at, and, you know, I want to really unpack this for our audience today. Because if there was ever a time, Rebecca, and I want to ask you about this, because if there was ever a time for us to really capture the essence of this level of fifth dimensional healing, if there was ever a time, it really is now. And, you know, what I'm really struck by is, as I ask myself, right, so I read your book, and then I go into my meditation. So you're going to laugh, right? So this is like me. This is like my Bronx meditation. I'm from the Bronx. This is like my Bronx meditation. I get quiet. I shut my eyes, and I say, okay, God, universe, what is mine to do today? I get my answer. That's all of 10 seconds. I get my answer, and then I do it. For about 6 years, the answer has been one word, more. I always have to think, okay, I know what you mean today. But there are some days like today where I say, okay, could you please give me a little bit more information? What you've done is you've done that in this book. We know we have to do more. But what you're inviting us to learn about is what that more is and how to make it fit. And I want to ask you this. There's so many amazing things in the book. How did writing this book change you? I want to know how you became totally engulfed in Shaman Sister that you are because you wrote this book. Tell me the secret.
Yeah, so I wrote the book during the first lockdown, and it didn't give me more time because my business needed attention. So it was very challenging for me to actually sit down. And actually when I did, what I found is the only way I could really connect into the writing was literally sitting on the ground on the earth in the sun and writing like this, and then everything would just come. It would just come in. And so that's how I focused on the writing. But what I experienced is, because everything I wrote about are things I've had teachings on and experienced and stuff that I've worked with. And so I've already gone through a lot of initiations with this stuff and ceremonies, but every chapter, every topic brought me a new initiation into that specific thing. And I was like, well, I wasn't expecting this. So it initiated me in a way that has just been so beautiful, and it gave me the strength to be good with myself in putting this out into the world, because there's been a lot going on, and the timing, like people were saying to me, like, how is this, like, you doing this and the timing of it, everything, and it's actually perfect. So it allowed me to have a lot of inner strength to actually be able to embody this whole realm of shamanism and all the work that I do.
Yeah. So I want to just let everybody know, you can go to shamansisters.com, S-H-A-M-A-N, sisters, S-I-S-T-E-R-S.com, even though I may not be saying like sister, like with an A, it's like not. I don't know, maybe you've got the domain. That's a cool thing too, shamansisters.com. When you go there, you're going to find the complete energy of what we're talking about today. We're going to take a short break, Benny and Jamie, here in a minute. When you go there, you're going to see the essence of what Rebecca Keating is saying. She's not only putting things in the book, but she's saying, here are some things that you can look at to help you. When we come back, we're going to talk about this. My favorite, because I'm telling you, if you're following the Olympics, you will hear what these women talk about, like when they're done or when they're beginning. Some of them, you could actually see their lips moving before they get in that starting gate. The power of prayer. We are going to talk about how to kick it up a couple of hundred notches. We'll talk about the power of it, the way that Rebecca talks about it in the book. And then we're going to talk about, let's get on it. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back. And we've got three copies of Take a Look at That Book. I love it. We'll be right back, Benny.
I'm Carrie Nail from Nailed It Radio. Understanding our personality preferences can be huge in conquering miscommunication with others. For example, people who prefer to make thinking decisions want to evaluate situations calmly and logically, using the same principles in most situations. However, people who prefer to make feeling decisions want to evaluate each situation personally for themselves and others. And so a great strategy for thinking types is to develop rapport, listen empathetically, and appreciate the positives of the situation before providing critical feedback to feeling types. And for those who prefer feelings, be direct with thinking types and breathe deeply to stay calm. I specialize in helping people understand these differences so you can take them into every aspect of your life to thrive. For more information, you can visit my website, carrienail.com. That's K-E-R-I-N-A-I-L.com.
Life can be demanding, but sometimes our wheels are spinning and we're too focused on making them turn to notice we're stuck in the mud. Tune into The Pause with me, Ellen Wyoming Deloy, every second and fourth Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio. Learn how to stop, reflect, and start moving forward with intention. And if you're really looking to jumpstart your personal development, schedule a free coaching consultation with me at ellenwyomingdeloy.com.
Are you ready to experience full body system wellness? Tune in to the Empower Me Show with Pam Bright, a spiritual toolbox for your life. Embrace the fullness of who you are as a spiritual being, having a human experience. Pam Bright is a multidimensional healer, light language channel, energy intuitive, and spiritual transformation coach. Join her for a rich conversation about how to unlock all your spiritual gifts. Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio.
Thank you. Life is hard, and so am I. You better give me something so I don't die.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. Welcome back. So what I'm saying is, Benny, Jamie, let me just see that.
There we go.
Right here. Okay. Boom. Got it. Three copies, Benny. Jamie, 1-800-930-2819. And Benny's going to pop things in the chat to let me know how we're rolling with that. The other thing is we're taking your questions for Rebecca, 1-800-930-2819. You know, Rebecca, I want to ask you about this and about modern diet. Let's talk about a modern diet, and then we're going to go to a couple of things here. The power of prayer. The reason I picked that out is because the information that comes before, I do believe, is incorporated in this topic. And let me tell you why. You help us understand sacred altar. I don't even know how you got these pictures in here in this book. But the publisher was very kind to you, and you've done a great job. But leading up to the power of prayer, there are things that we could know about. And I want to ask you this question. What has shifted from traditional thinking about shamanism to the modern guide? Tell us from your perspective, you know, what it was it that you wanted to tell all of us to open up the invitation for the level of healing that's capable. Give me some insight, unless it's like a super secret.
It's not a secret. I mean, yeah, I think that it was maybe in the past viewed more as like, you know, this figure, this shaman with the headdress, and not that we don't still have those shamans, but really like we do all have an inner shaman and the ability to access these realms and do our own healing and be on our own journey and bring our power back. Personal power, I learned right on my very beginning of my shamanic journey. So it's just showing that in the modern day, we can, this isn't some kind of religious dogma or guru that we have to look up to. This is we're our own guru, and we can access all these tools and realms for ourselves. And that's really what is more bringing it into the modern time. And what it looks like for one person could be completely different than another person.
Tonight at 4:00, Doc Martin, Dr. Sharon Martin, has orchestrated a special show. And the reason I'm mentioning it to you is because there is a movement. I really, you know, I like the idea of calling it modern. I love that. But boy, I'll tell you, the power of this movement is so incredible. And at 4:00 tonight, you know, she is doing a show, which will probably go more than 1 hour, with a Bachi and Huchir, who is a ninth generational shaman, in trance. So we're doing something we've never done before, which is have a shaman from Mongolia, and there will be people, an audience included in Zoom. And we're going to get to see this. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because you are telling us that things like this are not for a small group of people. And yet, at the same time, while this may be a great show to watch tonight, without this, to figure out how to go from that energy and bring it into my life, daily life. So I want to jump to the power prayer. So glad you didn't water this down. No, I'm serious. I mean, do you know how many books like that where, you know, the use of power and prayer together is really just not done very well? But I want to ask you, what hit your heart to really feature this in a book on shamanism?
That's a great question. I grew up in a very religious family. My father was an extreme religious, and so I grew up actually not even be able to say the word God. And even when I started in shamanic training, we were using like Great Spirit and other words, but I could still not even write the word God. And but it allowed me, I was very uncomfortable with prayer at the beginning, but as I started learning more through shamanism, that it's not about religion. Like, prayer is a sacred power that we all have access to, regardless of any belief system. And so I started implementing prayer into my life, and it was just so profound what would come into my life from the power of prayer. And actually, I had one really, really amazing moment where I was kind of in a rut, and I was trying to figure out what was next for me. This is before I had the crystal shop and the community. And I had like that coming to God moment, down on the knees, crying, like literally just like, what am I doing? Please, God, Great Spirit, show me what's next. And it was so profound. The next day, I literally found my space. I wasn't even looking for a space. My space came to me. It was in the perfect spot, and everything that's unfolded. And I was like, when we have that sincere intention and we send that prayer out, the energy that we are asking for is there, just waiting for our ask, for our prayer. So it's changed my life.
And we're going to talk about some of the things you discussed earlier in the book, because I think it's so important for us to talk about altars, to talk about the directions, to talk about the energy, and to talk about why, you know, the mystery of this has been shared with us and brought forth. But before we do that, we've got a caller. And I would love to connect you with a caller. One of our listeners from Canada. Benny, let's bring Charlene on.
Charlene, welcome to the show.
Hi, Charlene.
Hello. Hi, ladies.
Hey, let me introduce you to Rebecca.
Hello, Rebecca.
Hello.
I have a question.
Go for it.
I managed to get you on Facebook through the Shaman Sisters, but do you have a website also? Like, I didn't get to jot it down.
Yes. Yes, it's shamansisters.com.
Perfect.
S-H-A-M-A-N, sisters, S-I-S-T-E-R-S.com.
Perfect, perfect.
And you're going to get a copy of the book, too. So, sure, Benny, about your
You know, I'm really excited, like, it's just to be connected to everybody out there. Just excited, and this book sounds amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, what do I have here? Two Canadians right here with me now? Is that correct?
Yes, yeah.
There we go. See, I love this energy.
Oh, my goodness. That
did you know
so cool.
That, Charlene? No, right?
No, I didn't know.
Yeah,
where's
your shop, Rebecca?
So my shop is in Mississauga, Ontario. I'm originally from BC, but I live out here now in Ontario.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. I see a field trip coming on there.
Gee, I'm in British Columbia.
All right.
Oh,
field trip.
Yeah.
Field trip. Do you have any other questions for us? Because we're going to get into prayer right now, and what does it mean to set up the sacred space? But more importantly, what does this mean when we talk about energy, energetics, cutting the cord, not bringing along the baggage? Anything for Rebecca you want to ask her?
No, you know what? I'm going to learn from her right now.
Okay, good. Charlene, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what it means to have a number of different things operating at the same time. For example, what is heart-brain quick coherence technique? What are some of the things that Rebecca is sharing in this book that are taken from ancient philosophies, but we bring them forward to the energies we have now? You know, we bring them forward to the digital age of what we're talking about. And what does that mean to bring them forward, have them in play, set an intention, and then pray and receive? Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Everybody, it's me, psychic medium Jamie, and me, spirit walker Nicole. We are so excited to introduce you to our new live call-in show called Shades of Spirit on TransformationTalkRadio.com. As we connect you with your crossover loved ones, angels, and guides, and also help you develop your own psychic and healing abilities. For more information and to book your own private experience, go to ShadesOfSpirit.com and also follow us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
We figured by the time we turned 50, we kind of had life figured out, but we were not prepared for the realities of midlife. Tune into And That's When I Realized, the truth and comedy of midlife, with me, Susan Dolce,
and me, Leon Dyer, every second and fourth Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You're not alone in these challenges, and sometimes you just gotta laugh.
Find us at SusanDolce.com
and LeonDyer.com.
Want to ignite your best life full of joy, passion, and purpose? Then join me, Stephanie James, for The Spark, Wednesday night, 6 o'clock Pacific Time, 9 o'clock Eastern, on TransformationTalkRadio.com, and learn how together we can illuminate the world. Learn more on StephanieJames.world. The best is yet to come.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack, and I'm excited to tell you about the latest technology. It is new to this country, and it's just amazing. Dada Germany. The Healy is state-of-the-art technology for improving and changing the body vibration. I have more information about the Healy on my website, MaryJaneMack.com, or you can call the office at 888-777-4232.
Welcome back, everyone. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. 1-800-930-2819. We've got copies of the book to give away. Jamie, certainly on Facebook, you certainly are able to do that as well. This is it. This is like the coolest thing. It is the ultimate guide to shamanism, a modern guide to shamanic healing, tools, and ceremony. I love it. Rebecca Keating is here, creator of Shaman Sisters. Go to the website, shamansisters.com. There is also a way for you to join that group. Lots of interesting things. And we are going to talk about the power of prayer. And the reason I like the power of prayer, because I see it stuck in the middle. All right? It's like a cookie filling. It's in the middle. And there are things that come before it and things that come after it. And I call it the middle because people think prayer is the end all. But there's preparation before, and then there's preparation during, and there's preparation after. Everything from cleansing crystals to creating space. That leads us into trance states. So let's talk about prayer and how difficult it is for people, just like you described. But also, some of the tools you put in here help us set the space for ourselves and engage. Talk to that point, especially because we're living in a time where energy is so dense. And do we actually have to really cut the cord of the energy of the past and maybe the present in order to receive the goodies of our vision.
Yes, and that's why I put such a big emphasis on the fact that energy is literally everything. And when you understand that energy is everything, then you can use various tools to clear out those energies that are, we're inadvertently just bombarded by them all the time. And so when we start with the setting up of the sacred space and, you know, working with the elements and calling in the four directions and really like commanding that the space that you're now working in is a sacred space and you've cleared the space and you've got your altar, if you choose to work with an altar, and then that just sets up the container for you to really be very present with whatever is going to arise. And that's when you can, you know, sit with maybe something that's bothering you or a situation that's stressing you out, and you can really clear your mind and clear your energy and cut cords. Like sometimes people in our lives or situations, they need to go because we need to make space for what we're calling in through our prayer. And so really being in that container of openness to allow, and when you're allowing yourself to go into a bit of a trance state, whether you're doing some drumming or you're using a rattle or you're just using your breath, that's when the words that come out of you, the intentions, sometimes you're just like, wow, I didn't even know that was there, because you are connecting to something higher. You're connecting to your higher power, and when you do that, It just comes through.
You know, we're seeing this over and over and over again, and we're seeing the energy of it. You could see on people's face and, you know, in the Olympics. And the reason I bring the Olympics up is because we can tell the difference sometimes as people. We can tell the difference where there are some folks that have confronted their past, confronted their challenges of COVID, confronted, and have left it behind. And by the way, Canada, shocker, Andre Degrasse, totally in the 200 meter, just knocked everybody out and won the gold. And when you look at the interview in his face, and the reason I bring this up is I'm just watching energy at the Olympics. When you look at his face, there's something so powerfully humbling that you have to know that his preparation for this had to be shaman-like. Now, I don't work with him, but you can just tell. What have you seen from your experience? And maybe we could talk about some examples. Maybe some of the ceremonies that folks can do, even in setting up the four directions or creating a medicine wheel. See, we think we have to be out in the desert for 10 days. I mean, I've done that, but we don't anymore. What can we do to really set the stage for us to have a shaman sister practice every day?
Yeah, I mean, I see all sorts of people, like you said, they're just carrying so much weight, and they're carrying like the weight of the world, you know, or what's going on in their families. And it can be very simple to have a daily practice where you spend, you know, 20 to 30 minutes just being with yourself and setting up a sacred space. And even in the book, you can go to the four elements, and I have a ceremony for every single element. So you can, like, for example, a fire ceremony is amazing for letting go of the past, shedding the old skins, being transformed and reborn. And so you can do the fire ceremony, even with a candle is okay. And you can let all that go and really just do your prayer, do your cutting cords, which is also in the book. And you can choose any of the ceremonies that feel aligned and do all of them and just allow those layers to be shed and to begin to fill yourself up with the things that you want to bring into your life. and, you know, the belief systems that we've been programmed with. And when we realize a lot of this stuff is just programming and belief systems, and we don't have to carry those with us anymore.
Right. You know, do you have a go-to, Rebecca? And what I mean is, you know, when I'm really cramped and I find myself in a moment where I need to hit the pause button, I sort of have a go-to. And I want to ask you about this because the difference in my mind between the way we understand ancient traditional shamanism and modern shamanism is that we don't need as much preparation if we have the right tools. And your book really talks to that, right? I mean, everything from how to pray. You go on to say prayer is a sacred power that is accessible for you anytime in any space. And if we could wrap our minds around that, how might we transform our day?
Yeah, even actually every morning I usually say some kind of prayer, and literally it might be just like one intention. But what I do, what I find really important in the prayer aspect is to really feel the gratitude for that prayer and really feel the joy of having that. Like, how does it feel in the body if that prayer is already present? And then you can start to embody that prayer in your day. And then energetically, of course, when you're embodying that prayer, then you're really able to call those energies into your life. So that's a practice that I have every day. And I also find for me, my go-to is usually either dance or music, just playing music, just playing, like doing my drum, doing my rattle, often with friends or just by myself or my harp. And I'm still learning a lot of this stuff. You don't have to be an expert. It's just connecting to the music. Is lately that's my go-to, is playing music.
Yeah. And you know, it's so funny you bring that up. I was practicing yesterday or the day before. I play a sport and I was practicing, and I got to set up in my garage. I've got a net to catch the ball. Table tennis is what I do, ping pong. And I got the robot, and so I go out there to do it, and like Linda's with me because she is my best friend since God knows how long. And we go out there, and I've got my iPod, and she's watching me because I've got to play music, and I play and I learn with the music to the rhythm of the ball. And what I find is, well, wait a minute, if that is the way I get in the zone here, why am I not doing that in the rest of my life? And I want to ask you this question. How can we remember? How can we remember? Because you talk about harnessing the power of the elements. And I think one of the ways we can remember, perhaps, is to have perhaps an element, whether it's this amethyst over here or something. What is your best way that you've been able to say, I'm going to bring in this element, I'm going to do this? How do we remember that we have this power?
Yeah, and I think it's like a practice, like anything. So sometimes, like even like someone will say, oh, my bracelet is a reminder for me to always come back into the present. Or, you know, when I'm out in the sun, I remember to connect with the sun. When I feel the wind, it reminds me to you know, work with the spirits of the wind. So breath for me is really powerful, like bringing myself back into my breathing. And also you mentioned the heart math, quick coherence technique is so powerful, so simple and so powerful. Athletes use it. It's like used by psychologists for people who are dealing with anxiety or depression. And it's literally like a 3-minute practice, but you can do it all day long. And it's just about bringing your mind into your heart. So you're letting go of the mental chatter. And then you are breathing, imagining that you're breathing through the center of your heart chakra. And when you're focusing on that heart breath, and then you even can bring in positive emotions, and that's how you shift your energy. Within 3 minutes, you can go from anxiety to peace and calm and joy. So that has been that I've used that tool for many years, and it's very simple.
I want to jump to a conversation that, you know, is so important to have right now. And as we go through the book, it clearly is a guide. And I want to talk with you a bit about how you've integrated not just ancient techniques, but crystals and oils now. Now, I want to ask you, if I were to put you on the spot and say, what is your favorite combination today of crystals and oils to clear energy, what would they be?
So black tourmaline is the stone that changed my life when I used to work as a registered nurse. It absorbs and protects and clears all sorts of unwanted energy. So black tourmaline has been my go-to recommendation for grounding and protection. And then selenite is also a really beautiful stone that is clearing and a little bit more high frequency. I also love Larimar. I have it on my wrist here. It's a beautiful heart chakra stone that is just so amazing. And then for essential oils, I love rose oil. Can't get enough of it. Also, it's got the highest frequency of any other oil. So if you just even smell it, it just opens up your heart and allows you to. I had a bottle the other day. I let someone smell it, and they started seeing visions from it. It's that powerful.
Yeah.
She started seeing visions. So.
Tell everybody what it is again. I want to make sure they hear it.
Rose essential oil.
Oh, yeah. My gosh, right?
Yes, yeah. And then frankincense is also a beautiful one, a very spiritual one that people can use to connect, you know, even just smelling the frankincense and connecting to the spirit of that plant is always more powerful as well when you kind of connect and honor the spirit of the plant. And then I also really like Palo Santo as the stick, but the essential oil is quite nice as well and uplifting.
You know, I want to just talk for a minute because this is one of these situations, scenarios that I think is worth really further investigating for our audience. Sometimes we intuitively know this. No kidding, really. So I just moved into this new place, great place. It didn't have a lot of landscaping, so I start to plant things. But in the front, right, of the home is like about 7 or 8 rose bushes. And the neighbors are coming over, and everybody's coming over, and they're like, just cut them down. They've never had roses on them, cut them down. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not feeling that. So I decided to trim them because I'm so drawn to rose. You know, I make rose water, spray it in the house. But every one of us is surrounded by things like this. And by the way, the roses are still coming. I don't know. I don't think I'm the rose whisperer. But my point is this. Sometimes we're drawn to things, Rebecca, and we're just naturally drawn. Help us understand, for people that are listening, you might be drawn to maybe a certain plant. Maybe you're drawn to a certain color. Maybe you're drawn to a certain substance. Like breath is something that's bizarre in my deal, right? I don't know what it is about breath. What can we say to people when they have that attraction to help them move forward and communicate with it? Is that weird, communicate with it?
Yeah, I mean, everything has a consciousness and an energy, so we can communicate with it, even in terms of crystals and oils and things like that. And we'll have people come in and they'll be like, you know, what crystal do I need? And we always try to give them back the power for them to choose, because we know, like, we can see a pile of things and one of them is going to stick out, and that's the one, that's the energy that we're looking for. Like, I always tell people, I forever wore pinks and purples in terms of jewelry. Pinks and purple stones for years. I never was attracted to green or blues at all. And the last year or so, it's all blues and greens.
I'm with you. I mean, look at what I'm wearing. And hello, right? Can you see that?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's like, people are like, what's up with the green, Pat?
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
Tell me what's up with the green, because I don't really know.
And the greens are connected more with the heart chakra and the throat chakra. And so that's the energy that you're, you know, working with or resonating with at the time. And like, say, reds and blacks are more like working with grounding in the root chakra and things about safety. So the color, the colors have frequencies as well. There's all the stones have energies. All the plants have energy, so what one person likes might literally repulse somebody else, and that's just not for them.
Right. Look, I saved the best for the last 5 or 6 minutes. I love how much you talk about the trance state. Mm. It really doesn't get this kind of coverage, but I even love more about the way you're talking about it. You've introduced trance states to us in this book in a very contemporary way. I would have never really thought in a million years I'd get a book on shamanism and see a picture of a woman laying down with Mohs speakers and, you know, I mean, thank you for this. Can you talk about what you're inviting us to understand about trance states? Meaning, most of the time it's always been for somebody else. But tell us the importance of including it in your book for people.
Yeah, and the point of even that photo is to show people that we can all access trance states.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also multiple different ways that we can access them. And we don't necessarily need somebody else facilitating that for us. Like in shamanism, a lot of times the shaman will do the drumming for you to facilitate and guide you, but you might not have that accessible. So you can even be using your own rattle, and you can, you know, you can actually go into trance state while playing a rattle or a drum, or you can use something like some kind of binaural beats or different, even just relaxing music that has the right frequencies. And you can then go into your own trance state and have your own journey and ask questions or, you know, look to get a spirit animal. It's very simple. You can just intend, like, what is my spirit animal? Once you're in that trance state, it will often just come. It'll just be right there. And sometimes if you're not visual, you'll just, it's a knowing, or you'll hear the name of the animal. So it's that we can all access these trance states at any time that we choose to. We all have this ability.
Mm. We've talked about a lot. You certainly have put a lot in this book. I want to ask you, as we wrap this up in the next couple of minutes, there are some things I just didn't talk about. Can you talk for us and share with us what's the most important message you want to bring forward in your journey and inviting us? What's the most important message?
I think the most important message that is coming to me is just having the reverence for everything, really. And when we do these things, we do them with reverence and we do them with intention. And that's why in the book I offered so many different like examples and ways of doing things. But I said quite a few times, like, this becomes your own practice, and you will create your own wording, your own ways of doing the ceremony. And it's like you don't have to follow step by step and be like, oh, I didn't get that step right. It's really what feels good. It's really what feels good for you. And then you are able to access that inner shaman of what you need to express, so you can become your highest expression that's just so unique to you. And so I feel like really having the intention and the reverence and the love and the intentions to really connect with your inner self, and then everything else, you know, the steps are there as a guide, but then you will blossom into your own expression.
Thank you for today. I want to spend a few minutes and talk a little bit about what you've created so that people can engage. And what I love about this is, of course, yes, you've written a great book. And the book, right here, there you go. But you've also created other ways for us to engage, to learn more. Charlene referenced Facebook. But I want to ask you, you continue to grow, you continue to change, you continue to expand. Please tell me what your future vision is to continue your journey.
That's amazing.
I think it's your like the last 2 minutes of the show.
Yeah. So we do a lot of community stuff. It's really blossomed, like in-person stuff where people can connect in a community way. We do some virtual things as well. And I see the future expanding into like more global stuff, like more retreats.
Yeah.
Where people, I mean, we do that already and people can always fly in, but also taking people to other countries like South America, doing some travel. But in the meantime, you know, we are doing it here in Ontario. And I do feel like there's another book coming as well.
Yeah, totally.
It's just all evolving. And so, but my mind is starting to already write down, you know, stuff that I'm like, okay, that's the next book. That's coming in the next book. So,
yeah. And by the way, on your website, you have a number of different ways for people to participate, you know, everything from movement to cacao ceremonies to sacred music rituals. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, this, not just this one time write the book, but really the movement that I believe that you are creating, Rebecca. You know, you're creating a movement that says it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you're from, it doesn't matter, you don't have to be sitting up on the top of a mountain. This is being passed on for us so that we can truly step into the sacred space that, you know, is really our birthright.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we always tell people, like people feel at home, and we want that, and it's like family, you know,
yeah.
Connecting with people all over the world,
yeah.
Even when it used to be just sending them crystals, always meant so much to me. I was like, how can I even do this? Like, I'm sending this to Norway or China,
right.
Or wherever, and I'm like, Africa, and it's like a piece of, you know, this intention is going out, and I've always